Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link with me, Sarah Steffen, here in Bonn. Coming up, we'll take a look at what the 20-year sentence on former Ivorian First Lady Simone Gbagbo means for the country.
I think that this will be seen as a good landmark on the way to reconciliation, and also I think that many people would like to see African countries empowered to deal with cases in their own backyards, as it were.
And a court in Ghana has stopped trials on genetically modified crops.
The controversy surrounding the GM is not based on the scientific. It's based on people's own opinions.
Stay with us for those stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
A court in Ivory Coast has sentenced former First Lady Simone Gbagbo to 20 years in prison. She was found guilty for her involvement in post-election violence that killed more than 3,000 people 4 years ago. Eunice Vanjiro has the details.
It was 40 minutes after midnight in Abidjan when the judge finally announced the sentence. Jirabu, one of the lawyers of ex-First Lady Simone Gbagbo, compared it with lottery tickets distributed at random.
Dans la vie d'une personne, prendre 20 ans d'emprisonnement.
20 years of imprisonment is not 20 days. But we could have accepted it if the 20-year sentence was based on facts and evidence. But what was it based on? It was based on circumstances and subjective feelings. If we have been beaten, it is because the law has not been respected. That is a great pity and very regrettable for Ivory Coast.
Once referred to as Ivory Coast's Iron Lady, Simone Gbagbo had been on trial since January. She was tried together with 82 other allies of her husband, ex-president Laurent Gbagbo. The two were accused of varying degrees of involvement in the deadly unrest which swept through the country after controversial elections in 2010. Prosecutors had asked for a lighter 10-year jail term for 65-year-old Simone Gbagbo. During their closing speech, the team of prosecutors hailed the court and the jury for their patience during the trial and expressed their satisfaction with the way it had been conducted. Alain Bokola is one of the state prosecutors who represented the victims of violence.
We were not happy to see our brothers on trial, but still there were more than 3,000 victims in Ivory Coast. As I told the court earlier, some were even burned alive. For that reason alone, I believe that we, who represent the state of Ivory Coast, are satisfied with the sentence imposed. Because this way, we at least get to fight impunity in Ivory Coast.
The wife of former Ivorian President Laurent Gbagbo was also accused of disturbing public order and organizing armed gangs after her husband and his supporters rejected the results of the December 2010 presidential elections. She had been accused of actively supporting her husband and is still on the wanted list of the ICC, which wants to try her on 4 counts of crimes against humanity. Laurent Gbagbo was arrested in April 2011. He was shortly after sent to the ICC in The Hague, where he is awaiting trial for crimes against humanity. Gbagbo's son, Michel, was also sentenced to 5 years in prison for his role in the violence. Because of lack of evidence, 4 journalists and a cameraman who were tried alongside Pascal Afi Nguessan, the chairman of Gbagbo's Ivorian Popular Front, were acquitted. Afi Nguessan was sentenced to 18 months in jail for his role in the unrest. Simone Gbagbo's defense team is expected to appeal against the sentence within the permitted 5 days.
Eunice Vanjiro reporting. And we stay with that topic. What does this outcome of the court case mean for the International Criminal Court, the ICC, in Africa? Is local justice proving to be more effective? My colleague Eunice Vanjiro put that question to Mark Stevens, a human rights lawyer with Finer Stevens Innocent based in the UK.
Well, I think one of the problems with ICC cases is that it requires the local authorities to hand the individual over. And of course, there was a request going back to 2013 for the ICC to be given Simone Gbagbo to stand trial along with her husband. And it'll be interesting to see whether the ICC now proceeds and asks for her extradition to stand trial on what are in fact more serious charges than the charge she's been found guilty of, namely undermining state security, which was during the post-election period, which led to the violence in 2010 and 2011 and the deaths of nearly 3,000 people.
And does this encourage more African countries to deal with criminal issues on crime against humanity on home ground?
Well, I think that many people would like to see African countries empowered to deal with cases in their own backyards, as it were. But I think there is a degree of concern and perhaps a little scepticism which is deserved, in that sometimes it's felt that former leaders get a slightly easier ride than they might do if they were surrendered to the ICC. And there is sometimes an allegation used by the defense that there is a political motive to the prosecution. And of course, it can't be said that the ICC, who are above petty local politics, are involved in a political persecution. And I think that is a matter of concern.
We see that Laurent Gbagbo, her husband, is awaiting trial at the ICC. And what does this mean for his trial?
Well, I think that you have a decision in Abidjan that there were problems of undermining the state security at the time. But of course, he's awaiting trials on crimes against humanity in The Hague. And those trials will take place and are, in some respects, slightly different to the slightly lighter charges which Simone Gbagbo was sentenced to a 20-year term of imprisonment.
And can we say that Ivory Coast has passed the test in its capacity to conduct a fair trial while contributing to national reconciliation?
I think that this will be seen as a good landmark on the way to reconciliation and also embracing an independent judicial process of something which was very, very difficult. And it's helpful, I think, that we haven't seen the sort of riots that we might have done as a response to Simone Gbagbo's conviction. And I think that that's a very positive sign and shows that the Ivorian people have really taken this approach by the courts. They see that it was objectively fair. And as a result of that, I think that that is very, very helpful. And we're not experiencing the sort of public order and the armed gangs that were roaming riot after the December 2010 presidential elections.
Is this whole issue going to play into the hands of the opponents of the ICC?
There are always going to be cases where it's not appropriate or going to be fair for the defendant or indeed the country to have an individual tried in their own country. And we do seem to be passing that point where there's an attempt to kill or hang opposition leaders after they lose power. And I think it is useful that people stand trial in some venue which is unscrupulously fair, as we see with the International Criminal Court under the auspices of the UN. And of course, the maximum in penalty is life imprisonment there. So for a crime against humanity, one might expect to see someone interred for life, but you certainly wouldn't see them facing the death penalty, because, of course, that would be a breach of their right to life, and we shouldn't be allowing any countries to continue with the death penalty.
That was human rights lawyer Mark Stevens speaking to Eunice Vanjiro. You're listening to DW's Africa Link, coming to you from Bonn, Germany.
Follow the changes sweeping across Africa. For analysis and in-depth reports, tune in to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link every morning, Monday to Friday.
Our next story takes us to Nigeria, where Boko Haram launched fresh attacks on the city of Maiduguri on Tuesday. Two blasts hit the market and a nearby street. This comes after troops from Chad and Niger managed to liberate two towns in the northeastern state of Borno from Boko Haram. With the help of its neighbors, Nigeria's army has recaptured a number of key towns in recent weeks. Our correspondent Alamin Muhammad reports from northern Nigeria.
Nigerian and Chadian troops launched major ground and air strikes in northeast Nigeria against Boko Haram on Sunday, shortly after the Islamic group's leader Abubakar Shekau formally pledged allegiance to the Islamic State militants in Syria and Iraq. The joint offensive freed the border towns of Malumpatori, where the headquarters of Abadam local government are located, and also the Demasak headquarters of Mobar local government. Both are in Borno State. Some 10 Chadian soldiers, as well as 5 from Niger, and hundreds of Boko Haram fighters are believed to have been killed since the operation began. By Tuesday afternoon, there was still no official reaction from Nigeria's federal government or the country's defense headquarters. But ordinary Nigerians generally commended the success of the troops in recovering the lost territory. Political analyst Dr. Sadiq Umar Abubakar says this is a good sign but should not be overestimated.
This success is recorded is not as a result of them having more equipment, more expertise, or more commitment to the Nigerian military, but unfortunately and sadly is that the Nigerian military were left no motivation, no requisite equipment for them to prosecute the war. And I think that is a very commendable effort, and I hope the Nigerian troops will learn a lesson from that and continue to do their best. But in reality, I'm sure they are going to face a lot of challenges of sabotage and a lot of things to do with that. But they have to know that the commitment is not just about Nigeria, but about the entire region with their members.
Over the weekend, Nigerian troops also recaptured Bunihadi town, the headquarters of Gujuba local government area, and Bunigari town, both in Yobe states. Borno State Governor Kashim Shettima said it was time to stop criticizing the armed forces, but praise them instead.
Our military, plus their counterparts from Niger, Chad, and Cameroon, they have recorded tremendous success. We cannot but commend them for the gallantry they have displayed in recovering some of the lost territories. It's for us to give them all the moral and logistic support for them to accomplish their goals. They have families, they have blood running in their veins. They are risking their lives for us to have a sound sleep. So I think they deserve to be commended, not to be condemned. They need our support in whatever way.
Kashim Shettima also spoke in more details about the overall situation.
You know, counterinsurgency is a very protracted business. And in guerrilla warfare, it's the opponent that dictates the pattern of the game. Insurgents have a territory of over 69,000 square kilometers to play around with. And believe me, it's an issue of hit and run. But the insurgents have now been largely driven out of northern Borno. They are being squeezed into a tiny corridor at the southern tip of the Sambisa forest. This is why the security situation in Goza, in Chibok, in Damboa, in Haul, and other parts of southern Borno, plus Kaga in northern Borno, is very precarious.
The escalation of the joint military campaigns against Boko Haram came just weeks before Nigerians head to the polls for an election postponed from the mid-February because of the security concern.
Alamin Muhammad reporting.
Behind the headlines.
In Ghana, genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, have made headlines. A civil group supported by farmers took the issue of genetically modified crops to court, arguing that GMOs are harmful. The court in Accra has now decided to stop trials for GMO crops like cowpea and rice. Isaac Kaleji has been following the controversial debate.
The fast-track High Court in Accra gave the order for the production and sale of genetically modified cowpeas and rice in Ghana to be halted. The court said Ghana's Agriculture Ministry cannot approve the sale of GMOs until it rules on a case brought before it by a civil group, Full Sovereignty Ghana FSG. The group had sued the National Biosafety Committee set up by the government to oversee the release of the genetically modified crops onto the market. Trials of these crops have been underway months now. FSG's lawyer, George Tetewayo, says the committee's work is not backed by law. He adds that most Ghanaians know very little about genetically modified organisms and any potential health risk.
There should be huge consultation by stakeholders and the citizenry for the people to know that there is the presence of GMO. If this is not done, it is a breach of the Biosafety Act. We are saying that in the event that the committee can even act, they are breaching these laws. Because if a Ghanaian go to the market today and there's a GMO rice that the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research is about releasing, that Ghanaian will not be able to identify which rice is GMO and which rice is organic.
Farmers groups are backing the move by food sovereignty Ghana. They fear they will be thrown out of business if their traditional ways of growing crops are altered. Bafo Sapon is a farmer who wants Ghana to remain GMO-free.
70% of the world's food is grown by small-scale farmers. And so it is only big agribusiness is going to push for genetically modified foods because, again, it's big business. But the small-scale farmer, we are fighting for those rights because they deserve the right to continue to manufacture the seeds and breed the seeds and select the seeds as their forefathers have done.
Scientists promoting genetically modified organisms say Ghanaians are being brainwashed into believing that such an advanced form of increasing crop yields is dangerous to their health. Scientist Dr. Margaret Ota Atipo says opponents are just scaremongering.
The organizations which are anti-activists read all kinds of materials and then they come out with their own theories about genetically modified foods, and it is frightening the farmers.
Dr. Tipo's views are shared by the director of Ghana's Biotechnology and Nuclear Agriculture Research Institute, Professor Kenneth Danso. Danso says the opponents of GMOs in Ghana have no scientific basis. He believes the technology will greatly help.
The controversy surrounding the GM is not based on the scientific. It's based on people's own opinions. But as far as I'm concerned, when there's a problem that we have done all our best using conventional technology and we cannot solve it, then we have to use the gene technology. But let us also take note, it is not a panacea to all our problems, but it can help us solve some of our problems.
Meanwhile, Parliament is considering reviewing earlier legislation passed to regulate the commercialization of GMOs and reward scientists for breeding new types of crops. Majority Leader in Parliament, Alban Gbagbin, says the controversy over the matter has made it a matter of urgency for a new law to be passed.
If there's no law in place, how do you prevent people from bringing in into Ghana things that are detrimental to the national interest? You must pass the law. And this is the law we want to pass. After going to the right people, I am convinced that we are doing everything to protect the interests, the lives, the health of Ghanaians.
As Parliament continues its deliberations, the Fast Track High Court will resume hearing the case filed by the civil group early next month. Ghana is a signatory to the Cartagena Protocol on Biosafety, which in part requires parties to promote public awareness and education regarding the safe transfer, handling and use of living modified organisms. The agreement also requires parties to consult the public on decisions regarding food biosafety. The current debate in Ghana indicates that these requirements have not yet been fully met.
Isaac Kaleji reporting.
Africa on the move. Behind the headlines. Making a difference. Human rights. Listen to Africa Link's special weekly reports, bringing you more in-depth reporting.
Mozambique and Zimbabwe have been hit by an outbreak of cholera. According to authorities in Zimbabwe, more than 10 cases have been recorded since the beginning of March. In Mozambique, the disease has killed more than 30 people. Cholera is a bacterial disease that usually spreads via contaminated water. It causes severe diarrhea and dehydration, and if untreated, people can die in a matter of hours. Our correspondent in Harare, Columbus Mavunga, has this story.
Zimbabwe's Health Minister David Parirenyatwa says all cholera cases in his country are in four provinces that share a border with Mozambique.
We're still safe in Harare as of now, but as long as we have poor sanitation, poor water delivery systems, and people cannot get water, the danger of cholera in this country is still very, very high. In some parts, the sanitation coverage, especially in Chiredi, is as low as 8%. It means that out of 100 households, only 8 have got toilets.
Chiredi is a district in the southeast. It was one of the areas hit by an outbreak of cholera in 2008, which claimed over 5,000 lives. Itai Rusike is the director of the Community Working Group on Health, which worked with many international organizations such as UNICEF, MSF, and WHO to fight the 2008 outbreak.
Unfortunately, since the 2008-2009 outbreak, we have not been able to address the fundamental public health issues that then creates an enabling environment for cholera to thrive. If you look at the current response, to us it's a wake-up call to invest in infrastructure. We need long-term measures in terms of making sure that people have access to safe, clean drinking water.
Health Minister Parire Nyatwa said while he admitted the issue of infrastructure in Zimbabwe needed to be addressed, information sharing with other African countries was also important because free movement across the continent was another way of transmitting diseases. He said a committee had been formed to address that issue.
This is working very well, to the extent that we now know that in Mozambique and in Malawi, they have got cases of cholera. And I have personally arranged a meeting with my colleague, the Minister of Health from Mozambique, that we should meet at the Tete border so that we can discuss and highlight the need to fight cholera within the region. It's next week, but it has to be imminently so.
While the figures are still far below those of 2008, health workers want the government to take swift action to improve sanitary conditions and increase supply of clean water. One lesson learned from the Ebola epidemic in West Africa is that no time should be lost in implementing measures to halt the spread of a disease, including public awareness campaigns.
That report by Columbus Mavunga.
Opinion.
This week, we'd like to know your take on our top story. Former Ivorian First Lady Simone Gbagbo has been sentenced to 20 years in prison. Now, will this verdict give clout to opponents of the International Criminal Court who say that Africa can do it alone and doesn't need to have justice dispensed in The Hague? Send us your thoughts in a text message to country code 49-160-9575-9510, in an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or in a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.de/AfricaLink. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations, send us your feedback in a text message, and sign up for our newsletter, dw.de/AfricaLink.
And now a reminder of our other stories. Nigeria and its neighbors managed to win back towns that were previously occupied by Boko Haram. A court in Ghana has stopped trials with genetically modified crops. And Mozambique and Zimbabwe have been hit by an outbreak of cholera. That's it for now. Please do join us again tomorrow for more stories from the African continent. Till then, I'm Sarah Steffen saying thanks for listening and bye for now.